adventure.
It is a new adventure.
Yeah. This is our first day away from the old mothership. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 206-420-0997. Last I checked, I'm still Sam Mulvey, and with me today is Rebecca Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Sam.
Great. And Bridget Lombardo, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Okay.
Happy to be here.
So the news. Oh boy, the news.
There's lots of it this week.
There's one news story which we really should just cover, and the only thing that needs to be said about it is the title. So I'm just going to throw the title out there. It's not really atheism related, but I just want to let you, let this one roll around in your head for a minute. Russian sex geckos die in orbit.
Russian sex geckos?
Russian sex geckos die in orbit.
Oh,
but that's sad.
But let it roll around in your head for a minute.
Poor little lizard.
Hey, they got to be orbital sex geckos. They have the best gecko life ever.
They have the best.
Come on.
The best band name.
They got shot.
That is a good name.
They got shot into space specifically to have sex with each other.
I wonder what the purpose of that was.
I did read up on it a little bit. It was about just general kinds of organismal reproduction, about how space affects just different kinds of organisms and systems and things like that. And they unfortunately lost some sort of link with the actual geosynchronous orbiting pod of said geckos, and they are now all presumed dead.
I mean, oh, sad.
I understand how people like, oh, it's sad because they're dead geckos. But from my perspective, I mean, I lived in the desert for a while. Geckos were the most likely, like, annoying thing to get into our house, and they basically acted like very large cockroaches, except my cat. Well, actually, exactly.
Toys.
Yeah, they're cat toys.
Cat toys.
So I kind of got a different take on them than most people. Like, geckos, like little tiny lizard, desert lizards, kind of annoying.
Oh,
yeah.
I like them, but, you know, at least they had good gecko lives. Like, that's all you can really ask for.
They were gecko sex astronauts. Sextronauts, if you will.
And it's all in the name of science.
And it's all in the name of science.
Yeah. It could have said something really interesting about evolutionary processes in, you know, other different kinds of gravitational, you know, conditions. So,
well, you're really reaching, aren't you?
I am.
Well, we need to get I think it's time to get a little bit more serious. So we're going to talk about Duck Dynasty, right? Because that's serious. Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame said that the only way to deal with the extremist Islamic group ISIS is by converting or killing them. Robertson was a guest on the Fox News show Hannity when he said that he wasn't willing to give up on converting the militants to Christianity, but that it would likely be necessary to kill them. He said, "I'd much rather have a Bible study with all of them than show them the error of their ways and point them to Jesus Christ. However, I am prepared for either one."
Oh, dear. Mr. Robertson. Are you aware of your own rhetoric, sir?
You know how I feel about these things. I kind of want to say, all right, Islamic State, Duck Dynasty guy, you're welcome to each other.
Right?
You guys can go off to your own little pen of whatever, dig a hole and try and convert each other or kill each other or whatever. Except that they generally don't keep it to themselves.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of falls apart. And the absolute similarity between the two is striking. But I can't imagine. I mean, this guy is reality TV, right?
Right.
So do you think he knows what he's doing here? Do you think he knows what he's saying?
Like, do I think that this is a deliberate sort of probe of to be controversial?
Yeah, I kind of wonder at that.
I think so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, ratings.
He's on Hannity, on Fox News. He's been booted from his own reality show for being anti-gay.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, is Duck Dynasty over now?
I think so.
Yeah, A&E said, no, we don't really like people that hate gay people, so we're not going to carry your show anymore.
No, at least there's that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, but, what do you say about this? I mean...
I don't know. Is he really saying, like, yes, I would be prepared to kill them if they didn't convert?
And
if he's saying that about if he's saying that about one group of non-Christians, is he likely to say that about me or about you?
Right.
Does Phil Robertson want to convert or kill me?
Right.
Now I sound like Alex Jones, but, you know. Duck Dynasty wants to kill me.
Duck Dynasty is made out of mercury and cancer. Hurrah! Yeah, that is the question. But, you know, it's for show. He got kicked off his show trouble for saying some weird things. So so
what goes on someone else's show and says more
so
weird
things.
So
he goes on someone else's show, but I think he realized that he made money from a very small group of people, made a lot of money from a very small group of people when he started being a jerk on TV. And so now that's his market. You might call that the Coulter effect. You know, her politics, whatever. But her job now is to basically go on TV, say something that she knows will rile people up, and take home a paycheck.
You know, I think here the reason that I'm not actually worried about Robertson trying to convert or kill Americans is because it's very easy to hate Islamic State. It's very easy to say these guys are bad. These guys are terrible. They're a threat to our American way of life. They're a threat to whatever kind of freedom. They're a threat to the people in those areas in which Islamic State is active.
Right.
There are moderate Muslims who hate Islamic State. I mean, the Taliban is losing ground and Al-Qaeda is losing ground because Islamic State is like even more extreme. I mean, it's easy to hate on them and say we should kill them or convert them. It's not easy to say, oh, some little school teacher in one corner of the country should be converted or killed, because there isn't a lot of like universal hate for, you know, me necessarily.
Right.
I think. I hope.
But it goes on. And now we're going to go from ducks to Greek proto-gods, pseudo-gods, I don't know. But it's Kevin Sorbo.
Well, we all started with sex geckos.
Yeah. Sex geckos.
You can go anywhere.
Yeah, sex geckos to ducks to Hercules now. Actor Kevin Sorbo recently claimed that atheists are angry because they don't know that God exists and is judging them. Sorbo made the statement on a Christian radio show appearance to promote the DVD release of his film God's Not Dead. Sorbo talked about how all the atheists he sees on TV are angry, and that he pretty much based my character off those guys that I see who are just angry. They're just filled with anger and hatred.
Well, I'm sure glad that you've concluded everything about atheists based on how they appear on TV.
Yeah. Yes. Might it be time for another Atheists in Fiction show? We haven't done that in a...
Maybe something for the Streamathon.
Maybe.
Yes, very early on, we talked about how atheists are portrayed in fiction, in media, in books. And
yeah.
And yeah, you do have a lot of angry people, but the thing is that they're not angry at God.
No.
In TV. They're angry because they're alienated from all of these God believers. I mean, you look at Dr.
Or,
House.
Or they're angry because they're being written by people who don't get it.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. House might be an exception. I believe the writers there were like, yeah, here's where we stand on this stuff. But
and the character of Dr. House isn't angry at God. He's angry because he's alienated and because he also is, you know, is just so very different from those around him.
But if that's the only flavor on television that atheist comes in.
Although on Bones, you know, she's an atheist and she's not particularly angry. She's weird, but she's not.
Isn't
like,
she autistic?
No.
She has some tendencies maybe that are a neurotypical, if you will.
Right.
But no, she's just highly, highly methodical and kind of strange and doesn't get a lot of social cues.
Okay, so you're hedging now, but every time I've talked about Bones off the air, everybody describes that character as autistic. I've never seen the show.
There are some people with Asperger's syndrome or who are on the autism spectrum who identify very much with Bones and hold up that character as sort of a role model.
Right.
Yeah. I have heard that. I have also heard people being very critical of her depiction.
So you're two flavors of atheist on,
you're a
on
robot?
Media are robot or autistic robot or heroin addict. Those are your two choices. I would say the problem here isn't atheists, clearly. Yeah. I mean,
well, Kevin Sorbo was really just trying to mix it up by having an angry college professor, because we don't have one of those.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the other kind of angry atheist.
Isn't God's Not Dead just Big Daddy the movie?
I guess. I mean, don't know.
Everybody's talking about Dark Dungeons as the first chick-tracked movie, because somebody's making Dark Dungeons into a movie. I think we've talked about this on the show a lot. Are you familiar with the tract?
Not really. No.
It's the evils of Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, okay.
A character in the tract hangs themselves because their D&D character dies, and their suicide note is it's my fault. Black Leaf died.
Gotcha.
And so everybody, you know, it's people are really looking forward to it. But I might say that God's Not Dead is a serious chick track movie based off of Big Daddy, which is the apocryphal, angry college professor Christian student who knows more than the
elitist liberal atheistic college professor.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I thought Big Daddy, you were referencing an Adam Sandler flick.
That's what I thought too. I was like, how are those two movies related at all?
You guys got to get up on your Chickology.
On our Christian media.
Specifically on Chick Tracks. They are so awesome. They're so weird. One of my favorites is The Last Generation, where it's got the little kid who turns on his parents and tells them how much they hate it. And it's drawn, this little kid is drawn so lovingly.
So angelic.
So angelically that you know, there was so much care putting into this obvious tool of Satan in this tract. It's such a weird thing. Ah, boy. But
being raised in stuff like that, I have a hard time swallowing it. Now, as an adult that's away from it, I'm like, I can't.
Well, let's unpack that for a moment, because that's interesting to me. Because, honestly, for me, laughing is a big coping mechanism. I make these horrible jokes sometimes because it's my way of relieving stress, dealing with the problem, trying to fit it finding some place to put it in my life where I can deal with it.
Yeah.
Does that just not work for you? It's
one of those things that, like, the fact that it's actually believed and that people are still using it, that bothers me to a point where I have a hard time laughing at it.
Well, it bothers me too.
Yeah. It's just, I just have a hard time laughing at it. Because it's I remember it as being a harmful thing to me growing up.
Okay.
Those sorts of things. And so I'm not at that point yet where I can laugh at it all the time. Sometimes I can, but not all the time.
Yeah. Maybe it's a sense of personal connection, because all the reasons you can't laugh at it are reasons that I do.
Yeah.
It's
because, Sam, you were not raised with that kind of thing as a
but I was kidnapped by them once or twice.
Yes.
It's not to say I have no interface, but
but it was my entire life until I was 17. So it sort of brings back those negative memories, and so it's a little hard to get past it.
How about you, Becky?
The Christian media, like Chick Tracks and other kind of tracks like that, it's just very alien. I don't think I even really saw a track, you know, one of those little pamphlets trying to convert you, until I was in college, honestly.
Let's make it personal for you. You were once a believer yourself. Is there any aspect of your belief from when you were a kid or when you were a young adult that you now find humorous?
Find humorous?
Yeah, that you laugh at. Is there anything that you're...
Sure. I mean, there's kind of the, in Jewish culture, there's a lot of the sort of self-deprecating humor that goes on. I think it's sort of funny when you see something that just seems so absurd, like there's the Kapparet ceremony for the Day of Atonement, and very ultra religious people still do this, where you take a chicken, you swing it a certain number of times over the head, and you wipe the blood on like one left ear and then your elbow, and like and then all of the sins have been transferred to that chicken, you know, like that just seems absurd. What we did was we took breadcrumbs and you cast them into a flowing body of water, and it was, you know, so you emptied your pockets and all of those little crumbs were as if the sins, you know, being washed away. That seemed, you know, fun and nice and symbolic and a nice sort of community activity. The chicken thing just seems ridiculous.
So funny.
Yeah.
Well, this is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we are going to, hopefully, talk about education. Sam Mulvey here.
And I'm Becky Friedman. After almost 4 years, our radio show Ask an Atheist returns to Seattle on KKNW 1150 AM on October 5th.
Join me and my rotating cast of atheists and freethinkers from around the world as we answer some of our favorite questions that we are totally not at all sick of.
Like whether atheists are even capable of feeling love or joy.
No.
Wait, what?
Catch Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey Sunday afternoon at 3 on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. Find them online at askanatheist.tv.
Author Jim Lawrence's In the Flip-Flops of Jesus is a blasphemous behind-the-scenes look at the Christian movie business of 1950s Hollywood. When young Randy Dillard hires on at a religious film company, he learns the screenwriter is a blacklisted atheist, the Key Grip produces stag films, the denominational reps are gambling addicts, and the producer of the Living Savior series is Jewish. Author Jim Lawrence's In the Flip-Flops of Jesus is available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook. Da 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 da! Billy!
again?
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
We're in a big move here.
We are.
There's a lot of stuff happening. And that's part of what's happening here. Actually, this is a mystery network problem. However, I am in the middle of working on ways to get rid of this mystery internet problem to make it where we're actually working internet failover and stuff here. But all that stuff takes resources, and it's resources we don't have. Moving radio stations is a lot like moving your apartment. So we're going to have another streamathon. It's going to be Saturday, September 20th at noon to Sunday, the 21st at noon. It's like I said, it's like moving your apartment. We need your help. I'm in the middle of moving a bunch of stuff, and obviously I'm apparently not coping with the changes as well as I thought I might, but
I'm looking forward to the streamathon.
Yeah.
It's gonna be we said noon on September 20th to noontime on Sunday, September 21st, and
yes.
There's a lot of Ask an Atheist cast and crew lined up to entertain you and each other on air.
Yeah,
it's really more for us. I mean,
well, you guys have
entertaining.
I thought people wouldn't like the streamathons very much, to be honest with you. I thought they would be, people would find them boring but people love them. They are our biggest fundraisers by far.
I love doing them. They're fun.
I should have actual drinking this time as soon as my ribs knit back together.
Yeah.
We also have another meeting coming up. Our Humanists of Washington annual membership meeting will be happening Saturday, September 13th at 3 p.m. at the Skyway Library at 7614 South 126th Street in Seattle, Washington. It is the first business meeting we've had with Humanists of Washington since I became president. And
it's been a long time. We've been doing some things behind the scenes and sort of some retooling. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And what's interesting here is it's a retooling, it's a rebuilding year. If you want to help repurpose an organization, if you want to help us get on the right foot, this is the meeting to come to, and I could definitely use your help. I will be giving my In God We Trust talk about the stuff that happened in August here in Pierce County, because that was me as president of Humanists of Washington doing it. And we should also have a lot of some interesting announcements that we'll also be talking about on Ask an Atheist. Some interesting, let's say, debatey type stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Let's just drop that out there. I'd also like to thank Richard from the Other Kent, UK, and Rick from Elma for meeting Peggy's challenge. You guys help us keep the lights on, and if you haven't noticed, we definitely need the help. If you would like to contribute to Peggy's challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, and it'll take you right to it. And yeah, wow, this was an adventure.
This was a challenge for you, Sam, but yeah. I think we're meeting it.
I think we are too. I would like to introduce somebody else right now. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Sam.
you're a friend of mine for quite a while.
Yes,
I've referenced you on the show more than once. But
have you?
Yeah, that is kind of the thing. What's interesting about everybody with me today is that you are all or have been school teachers, correct?
That is right.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about, without getting specific, because I want you to keep your jobs and everything. Becky, and just go right down the line. What kind of education stuff have you done?
So I have been in K-12 since 2004. I've taught mostly middle school and high school. Right now I teach high school, and I teach mostly Spanish, but also ELL. So that's English Language Learner. Some places of the world that's called ESL.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of a remedial work with some of our high schoolers who are at risk of not graduating. So I've taught science classes and history classes. I've also done Head Start and bilingual with kindergarten and all sorts of things like that, but mostly high school and mostly Spanish.
I have spent my entire teaching career in high school. I've subbed everywhere, but right now I've spent the last few years at a magnet school for math and science, and I'm an humanities teacher there, so English and history.
Have I ever told you how awesome I think that is, being a humanities teacher at a nerd school?
Awesome is one word for it.
I'm sure it's daunting.
It's a very interesting phenomenon, because in most other schools that I have found, the humanities are very privileged, because that's the one thing you have to do all 4 years is take English class. And then suddenly here I am with these nerds who want to go on and be engineers and scientists, and they're really just there because they have to. And it's a bizarre phenomenon, but I love it. And it's very interesting opportunities, and it's changed the way I think and teach and speak. So I love it.
Very cool. Bridget.
Well, I spent 5 years as an educator of the deaf primarily at the high school level, but I also worked with kids as young as 3 in our preschool, and also worked a little bit in intermediate and some middle school, and I did a little bit of everything. And I also taught at the high school level some American Sign Language, and I don't do it anymore, but 5 years under my belt was enough.
So a lot of educational stuff here, and I guess for what it's worth, I'm not an educator, and let's just say my interface with education has been mixed.
Mixed. Okay.
I had some good times. In fact, most of what I know about evolution was taught to me by my sixth grade teacher, who just decided that evolution would be the one thing she would teach sixth graders. We spent most of a school year on it.
Nice.
So, and I tell you what, that once that got into my head, and it's like, here's how the science works, and religion never came up. It was just, this is what evolution is. When people tried to discount it, when people started trying to inject, back in my religious days, when they tried to inject reasons why evolution is wrong, I'm like, that's not how it works. And I knew that when I was a sixth grader. On the other hand, I am a high school dropout. So we got a very interesting email, which brings us to today's show topic. And I feel like I'm doing the community a disservice by having this big, enormous technical difficulty. But we're back. We're live. I'm seeing Twitter. People are letting people know. Thank you guys so much. However, Alex from Maine wrote with some pretty probing questions about teaching as an atheist. And they write, I just completed my first year as a high school biology teacher. Students often ask me about my religious views, and I'm usually torn about how to respond. I'm an open atheist in my personal life, but I do not know if this is the appropriate place for me to be entirely open about my beliefs. As an atheist, how should I address student questions about my religious beliefs?
First of all, Alex, congrats on completing your first year, surviving your first year as a high school biology teacher. That's really cool. I'm sure that it's varied in a lot of different experiences, but if students are asking you how you're going to address, you know, how should you address those questions about your religious beliefs, I would say, you know, under what circumstances are kids saying, hey, what kind of religion are you? Are they trying to witness to you? Are they trying to get you to come to their particular, you know, confirmation ceremony? Are they trying to, you know, like test you out, feel you out? What's going on? There's a lot of things here.
Yeah, I actually had an instance with a student that it seemed like they were being really confrontational with me about it. I was actually teaching a comparative religion class, and I taught everything as factual as a historical basis because it was a history class. But it came up with one of my students seemingly, you know, being really confrontational about what my religion was during class, and I was like, my personal beliefs are unimportant to this topic, but, you know, if you're really interested, come talk to me outside of school hours. And I did, actually, I found out that they were an atheist in a religious family, and they didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And that's where the aggression seemed to come from, because they thought that I was promoting a religion, just because I was talking about it, because that's how their family was. And so it was one of those things, like, suddenly I had this student that they saw me as an ally because I was willing to talk to them about it. Excuse me. And it was one of those sort of eye-opening experiences for me, realizing that, you know, there is a lot of power in being sort of that ally to that student. And I mean, I wasn't going to take classroom time to talk about it, but they did come to me afterwards and ask. Yeah.
On that note of being an ally to those students, the Secular Student Alliance has actually created this program. They've launched this program in the last year called secularsafezone.org, and it's really cool. And Sam was kind of bugging me for a little while. When are you going to be part of that? When are you going to be part of it? And it's something that was brought to the attention and the leadership of Secular Student Alliance, and that was that for LGBT teens, mm-hmm. there's the GLSEN.org is actually an educational advocacy network to create safe spaces for LGBT people and their allies and families on campus, because they receive a lot of discrimination, and said, yeah. Well, can we make it so that non-religious students also know that this is a safe place for you to be in? You will not be criticized for your lack of faith in a particular religion. And so I have it up in my window of my classroom, and amongst a lot of other things that say, like, si se habla español, and like other clubs and things like that. I have my safe space sticker, mm-hmm. For LGBT students and their allies, and then also my secular safe zone sort of emblem that's up there too. And it's cool. And the thing is that you don't have to be someone who's non-religious to declare your classroom a safe space for the expression of those views and those ideas, and just to say that you have a place in this classroom. To that end, I also have hosted the Bible Club during after school Friday time when their regular advisor had to go home. Sorry, kids, I'm not going to be able to keep my classroom open. And I'm overhearing, and I'm like, do you guys just need a space to meet? And they're like, yes, come on, I'm grading until 4 p.m. And so being public as a teacher by saying, you know, not this is what religion I am, but all the viewpoints are welcome to exist, and you know that you may question them during class time, or you may say this is not appropriate during class. But being that ally for lots of students, I think, is a really important thing.
Absolutely.
So the question about, like, how should you address student questions about your religious beliefs? Like, aside from the constitutional requirements of you probably shouldn't be, like, leading anything in your classroom, which I obvious. I think it comes down a lot to, like, the teacher's personal comfort. And I think that for me, at the high school level, if a kid cares enough that when I say, I'm not going to discuss that during class, but if you're really curious, come talk to me during a passing period or after school or something, the kid who comes and seeks me out during those outside of class, you know, classroom experience, to ask I'll tell them because they're trying to relate to me as a human being. And that's perfectly okay with me in the community that I'm in. I have that trust established and I'm not going to freak out about it. However, I feel like that works at a high school level because my students can see me as a teacher and can also see me as a private citizen. But those lines get murkier when you're younger and don't understand that your teachers don't fold up into the cabinet at the end of the night and sleep at school.
Yeah, one of Alex's concerns, actually, they write, as authority figure in my classroom, I feel like I should not show bias that might make students question what they think. Like, I would not feel comfortable with the teacher explicitly expressing a political viewpoint. And, you know, and also saying I never want to do anything that unnecessarily makes any of my students feel uncomfortable in my classroom. I wouldn't want our different viewpoints to create barriers that would make learning difficult. And I think in the biology classroom, that's a really... Actually, in any classroom, that's a really salient point. That's a valid point. You know, even I would question, Carol, even amongst high schoolers, whether they can see you as something other than an authority figure that might be there controlling what grade they get at the end of the semester, things like that. And if you say, oh, I mean, because we all know that young people are wont to say, oh, that teacher hates me. No? Yeah. does that teacher hate you, or did you just not turn in that homework assignment and that's why you currently have an F? You know, that kind of thing. So it would be a very easy thing for Alex to say, well, I'm non-religious, and then a child who maybe has failed the last three tests, who is religious, to say, that teacher is failing me because I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of those really sort of murky waters there.
Yeah.
Go for it, Carol.
I'm in sort of a unique situation because our school, I mean, every school should value the human connection, like the strong relationship between teachers and students. That's how learning happens. I don't know. I feel like we've got a special, because it's a very small school, so we've got the ability to build those relationships well. So I do feel that trust. If Alex is still a new teacher and is not feeling that trust and is feeling like this information could be used against them later, that might be a reason to just keep a lid on it for a while until you sort of feel your way through that.
I did have an experience when I was teaching ASL, which in Washington State, I don't know if it's true for everywhere in the country, but it's listed under the career and technical education. So it is, you know, being taught in a professional, like as if it was a professional environment. And I had a student use one of his presentation moments to sort of proselytize and badmouth other religions in this ASL class. And I use that as sort of a teachable moment for all of the students to be like, you know what? You have to think of this classroom as a professional environment. And in a professional environment, this sort of conversation would not be accepted. And that, you know, by this student doing this, you know, if you were in a professional environment, you could lose your job for that sort of conversation. And so even without bringing your own personal aspect to the talk that you're giving in a classroom, just to talk about the professional aspects of talking about religion in a professional atmosphere might be beneficial. And that way you can stay neutral, but still like give that sort of safe space to the students in that like, all aspects are understood and accepted.
One of the really important points here is about how to talk about religion as a teacher, because it will come up in whatever classroom you're in. Carol, you're an English teacher. There's going to be religious themes that pervade books.
Yes,
there
are.
You're going to have kids that want to use an oral presentation moment that you know, or a presentational speaking moment to share their own religious views. I mostly teach a Spanish class, so we're dealing with a lot of like cultural traditions, and so kids will say things like that. And so being able to talk about religion and being very clear that according to the Christian tradition, or according to you know, the Catholic Church in Spain, or according to this particular dictator at this particular time period in Nicaragua, this was permitted under a religious doctrine, you know, those kinds of things. And really making the language very explicit that human populations, that groups of people have their own stories, their own cultures, their own traditions. And in this class, this is what we are talking about. So in a biology class, you say, this is what the scientific community views. And in according to religious tradition, this is the story that's important to this group of people. The scientific community says this. And that's one way that I've been very successful in alleviating students' concerns even in a history class. We look at the anthropological record of human early human civilizations, and it's clearly stretching back before 6,000 years ago. And, you know, a student says, well, this is not what my church teaches. And I say, that's really interesting perspective. And church traditions will say this. This is what a lot of our scientific and historical communities will see. And we have lots of evidence for this having happened. And it seemed to so far alleviate a lot of their concerns, because I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying this is your story. This is your tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as that sort of explicit language, I also like to be, to a certain extent, irreverent, maybe is the right word, not towards the religious ideas themselves, but when it gets to the idea of, oh no, now we have to talk about religion in a classroom, because everyone understands this is a public school, there's a weird line, and we all kind of know where it is, but people have different ideas. So just to name that, like, if we have to discuss these religious ideas in a classroom because they're in the book and we need the context for it to talk about, now things might get uncomfortable, but we're just talking about this for the history's sake, and no one really needs to accept this as a personal belief if they don't want to. That's
if I can ask a question. Where is the line between irreverence and mocking in that situation?
Well, I think I'm trying to be irreverent to the situation. Like, it's not about the religious ideas. It's just about the, oh, no, now we all have to get in a fight because we have to talk about religion in a public school, and I'm probably going to get fight, which everyone knows is not the thing that's going to happen. But just right. to name that, this could be a really uncomfortable situation. And I think to blow it out of proportion early usually helps me make it not a big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually had to do that in a health class, but that's a totally different topic.
But it's a similar kind of technique. Now we're going to be talking about something that might make us uncomfortable. Oh, no.
Let's laugh about it now.
Exactly.
And get it out of our systems.
Exactly. I think that religion can come up more often than not because it is such a part of our students' lives. It is a way that people interface with the world, either as a non-religious person, fighting against a lot of religious ideas, or as a religious minority, in any number of ways. And I also always feel it really helpful to state to my students, you are always at liberty to carry your Bible, to pray before you eat in the cafeteria. We don't use class time to do that, but I can't restrict you from doing that. I also cannot say as a teacher, that we are going to practice this or you cannot practice that. That would be against the law for me as a teacher to do that. Now, in terms of kids asking about my religious background, I am actually forthright with them. Part of what a lot of students ask me is, how do I know Spanish? And I say, well, I didn't, oh, you must have parents who speak Spanish. Are you Mexican? You don't look Mexican. Oh, well, are you Spanish from Spain? So it's kind of a mystery to my students. And I describe how, no, my parents don't speak Spanish, but I do have family that are Spanish speakers. They're native Spanish speakers. Oh, well, where are they from? They're from Argentina. Huh. And a lot of our student body isn't familiar with Argentina at all, or a population of Spanish speakers from Argentina. And so I have to go into the history about that part of my family escaped Europe during the 30s and then into the 40s, and part went to all different places. And Argentina was one of those places that both. Nazi Germans, unfortunately, also escaped to, but also a large European Jewish population escaped to Argentina. It was already the place where there was a large Jewish population through, immigration waves in the late 1800s. And I say, so this comes up, and, well, why did my family leave Europe to go to Argentina? And say, well, because I come from a Jewish background on that side of my family. And, an interesting thing is that kids say, oh, so you're Jewish. And I say, my family is Jewish. I come from a Jewish family. And if kids press beyond that, I usually say, I'm not religiously observant, but religions are very interesting to me. And that's usually a way that smooth things over, gives them enough of a little bit of a bone that they can sort of like say, okay, all right, I get it. Mm-hmm. On occasion, students have come across me in media outside of school, in my non-school context.
You are one of the most photographed atheists in Tacoma.
If you search Becky Friedman Tacoma or Becky Friedman atheist, you will see some images. So occasionally my students
will
come across those.
I remember doing the plaque or the image collage for the 200th episode, if you remember the advertising we had there, and it was just a bunch of images of stuff that had happened to us. You were most of them.
I might be
You know, we are married, but I do find you somewhat photogenic.
Aw, shucks.
That's so romantic.
So cute.
Yeah, romantic. Yeah, that's totally me.
So students will sometimes come across me, and, you know, they'll kind of ask me in a secretive way, I think I saw you in the news last night, Ms. Friedman. And I say, yep, you probably did. And then I leave it at that. And if they want to say more, then I figure they will. And they really haven't. So I'm just fine with that.
We're coming up to the top of the segment, but I'd like to take a few minutes to do a quick email. We can talk about this one. This is, school officials have duct taped over dedication plaques at two Midlothian, Texas elementary schools after the Freedom From Religion Foundation wrote the district about the religious displays. Soon after, an unknown person removed the coverings, and hundreds of families rallied in support of the plaques with signs saying, "Keep Christ in our schools," and, "Hey, FFFRF, our God is bigger than your lawyers." Despite the school attorney advising removal, the district is reportedly seeking legal counsel on the constitutionality of the installations and will keep displaying both until further notice.
Oh, goodness.
So,
I don't remember who emailed us to alert us of this particular news thing, but it's really kind of weird that you know, this is something. Sam, would you like to know what the plaques actually say? The religious message of this?
Sure.
All right. So it's a 2x3 foot plaque, and it says, "Dedicated in the year of our Lord 1997 to the education of God's children and to their faithful teachers in the name of the Holy Christian Church, Soli Deo Gloria."
Okay.
Yeah. So not really many questions. It's not part of the motto. It doesn't say, "In God we trust, yay teachers and right. yay education." It's like super explicit. And the fact that this only came up last year, from a plaque from 1997, that maybe this is out of place, I don't know. That's kind of concerning to me.
Yeah, it's been up for how long? And it's like, why is this just now being talked about?
I'm having trouble. Is 1997 when the schools were founded and this was part of it? Or is this a monument that went in later and somehow slipped through the cracks of like, hey, maybe you shouldn't put this up?
I think this was the two elementary schools were built in 97.
Okay.
And Carol, you had said something early.
Yeah. If I felt like if this had said dedicated in the year of our Lord 1897, I'd be okay, because then it just becomes a historical artifact. But 1997 is too recent for this
What's
to be
acceptable.
What's
the line for history? When does it stop being history? When does it stop being annoying and start becoming history?
Yeah, it's a great question, but largely it's when everyone involved is dead. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, I think if it's an actual on the National Register of Historic Places and it's not a functioning school, then I'd probably be okay with it. But we're talking about a school where indoctrination occurs and where indoctrination into bad things can, or things that, you know, the parents or the children might disagree with is easily possible. And, you know, I'm getting really sick of the argument that, oh, well, it's been up for 10 years. Why are you just complaining now?
Right.
Well, that is the worst possible argument. I could make connections to other, you know, civil rights movements in the United States, but I'm not gonna, because that's cheap. Becky.
What I'm trying to say is, why did it take this long? Why weren't we aware of it earlier?
Because people, maybe somebody didn't see it, and because we're a movement now. Just because it's been up for a long time doesn't make it legal by fiat.
I don't think so either.
We have, you know, laws and a Bill of Rights in this country for a reason, and just because you've been habitually breaking it for 20 years doesn't actually mean that's okay. That's really what it comes down to for me.
What I want to know is why this superintendent initially said, oh, right, okay, so we're going to duct tape over them, and then we're going to, you know, uninstall them. And meanwhile, someone rips off the duct tape, and now the superintendent is, oh, wait, I had no intention of removing them in the first place. We're going to seek legal counsel. Your district attorney, your school district lawyer, has already said, we better take them down. What more legal counsel do you need?
Exactly.
Hard to believe, but you know, do you think this is going to go the way of the "In God We Trust" sign in Pierce County?
I don't think so.
That hasn't actually gone up yet?
This is so explicitly religious, explicitly Christian. You can't make any argument that this is all-encompassing and universal. You know, the year of our Lord, holy Christian church, faithful teachers, soli Deo Gloria. I mean,
the two Latin crosses on either side of it. It's
Yeah, this is... It excludes people by definition.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to go into a break, sort of. If you're listening live and you picked up the end of the stream, we're going to leave you here. Thank you for tuning in. But if you're listening on our website, stick around, because when we come back from the break, we're going to have a moment of science, and we might keep talking some education, too.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
A Path Less Taken, From Ministry to Nonbelief and Beyond, is a provocative new documentary produced by Axis Mundi Media. It features in-depth interviews with Calvin King, Annalise Fonza, Teresa McBain, and Rich Lyons, all former Christian ministers who are now avowed atheists. A Path Less Taken is available now on DVD or digital download from Amazon.com.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. Oh, boy. Well, if you're listening on the stream, welcome. And if you're listening on the air on WPRR, welcome. But it has been an interesting technical week, I do have to be honest. But in order to bring things back to normal and back to fun, here is Dan Lombardo with a moment of science.
Thanks, Sam. Today's moment of science is about the so-called scientific controversy of creationism versus evolution. While evolution revolutionized the field of biology and is among the most tested, observed, and accepted scientific theories in human history, it remains a fact that a very small minority of scientists reject it. So far, Descent from Darwinism, a list of scientists that reject evolution compiled by the Seattle-based Discovery Institute, is about 880 names long. But of those scientists named, only a handful are in biology-related fields. A competing list, compiled by the National Center for Science Education, keeps records of scientists that are named Steve, who accept evolution. Project Steve now has over 1,340 signees. Still, 1,340 isn't that much more than 880, is it? It seems like it could be a viable controversy, right? Well, here's the joke. Only scientists named Steve who accept evolution are allowed to sign, and Steves make up only about 1% of American scientists. Some quick math tells us that the realistic numbers here are more like 134,000 for evolution versus 880 against, meaning that less than 0.1% of scientists reject evolution, and the real number of deniers is actually even less when we consider that Steve is a Western name and that, like Steves, creationist scientists are much less common outside of the United States. About 99.9% of the world's scientists accept evolution, and of those that reject it, almost none are biologists. Why? Evolution is the single theory of biology that ties the entire field together. Paleontology, ecology, genetics, botany, zoology, and even epidemiology make absolutely no sense without evolution. Removing evolution from the biological sciences would be like removing gravity from physics. The entire endeavor would become a disconnected jumble of meaningless blather. And speaking of meaningless blather, despite that, some creationists insist that the controversy between evolution and creationism should be taught in public school science classrooms. They've been pretty explicit in their reasoning. According to the Discovery Institute's own website, Under goals, they call introducing intelligent design, or the idea that some higher being created the Earth and the living things on it, a part of their wedge strategy, which is intended, in their own words, to defeat scientific materialism and to replace it with the theistic understanding that nature and human beings are created by God. In short, they know that intelligent design isn't science, but they believe that by treating it as if it were, they can gain more converts to their particular sect of creationist young earthers. To be clear, among biologists, there is about as much controversy about the validity of evolutionary theory as there is about the flat earth among geologists. None. The disagreement here is primarily between politicians, religious sects, and those without any scientific background or understanding. Personally, I'm all for teaching this kind of controversy in a philosophy, anthropology, or comparative religion classroom, but it has nothing to do with the core sciences of public schools, and there's just no place for it in their curricula, any more than there's a place for alchemy in the chemistry lab, intelligent falling in the physics lab, or speaking in tongues as a foreign language.
Fantastic. If you have a science question or just any sort of scientific process that you would like explained or controversy described, you can call us at 206-420-0997. Drop us a voicemail. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or you can go to our website and pose a question to Dan. Dan does like requests.
I do.
Now, we do have an interesting email for you. This is from Tim from the Secular Nation podcast, and they write, "Your references to Tailspin in 1984 really got me thinking. The character you mentioned, Colonel Spigot, is an anthropomorphic pig with a Napoleon complex from a country that's an obvious analog for Stalinist Russia, Thembria. Now, where else have we seen an anthropomorphic pig living in an analog of Stalinist Russia? One who not only has a Napoleon complex, but is literally named Napoleon. Could it be that the Tailspin universe is actually the same as the universe of George Orwell's novel Animal Farm, only generations later, after all the animals have risen up and erased humanity from existence? And could it be that Colonel Spigot and his Thembrian ilk are the descendants of Napoleon and his Animal Farm regime?"
I love this this conspiracy. Yes. I love this line of thinking.
I'm just sitting here with my jaw on the floor. This, this has changed my entire perception of one of my favorite cartoons. Wow. Well done, sir. I am blown away.
So what, how likely do you, is this now your headcanon? Is that how this works?
I like the term headcanon.
Not mine.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to run with that. I think that that maybe Cape Suzette is like the idealist sort of like capitalist, you know, offshoot that managed to turn things around and become sort of a bastion of goodness in society. But naturally, they have this Shere Khan at the base of it, the ultimate capitalist who is completely ruthless, but in his sort of I almost want to say like ideal Randianism, like the way that Randians want it to work, as right. opposed to the way that it does work. He's actually made Cape Suzette a nice place to live, but it's worth noting that Cape Suzette is surrounded by these massive, you know, unbreachable stone walls with huge cannons to keep any aircraft or ships from coming in that they don't want. So they have this incredibly well-defended military society.
I feel like
keeping
this is
going to
lead into a lemon grab thing.
That would be unacceptable.
I love how sort of the thinking of different philosophical underpinnings of cartoons, of just different little media and things just all can come together. So I do.
Absolutely.
Hey, can I call back to the moment of science for just a moment?
Sure, go right ahead.
So, Dan, you said... Yeah. Teaching the controversy in a science classroom has just as much place as talking about speaking in tongues in the foreign language classroom or in the world language classroom. And I would like to present this challenge to you of where speaking in tongues might be appropriate in a world language classroom.
Ooh.
Because actually one of the ways my colleagues and I start out our year of new students who have never studied a world language before in a classroom is to actually show little clips from the film Despicable Me. Despicable Me has little characters called minions, and they speak sort of a portmanteau pigeon language, just mixed up of things that is no human language. It's just made up little sounds and things like that. And we say, how much can you understand about what the minions are saying? They are for all intents and purposes, speaking in tongues. They're speaking a made-up language, but they're definitely communicating. And at other times in a language classroom, we actually say, when we're looking at nonverbal communication, speak your made-up language, and then see what you can convey through your movements, gestures, all kinds of things like that. So that was just a little, that was my challenge about speaking tongues. But certainly not religious echolalia or glossolalia.
Yeah, I would say the speaking in tongues that I have observed seems to be most notably without any sort of structure. Uh-huh. That it's sort of random syllables that are being spouted out at random tempos, you know, that they don't really follow what you would think of as a language. If I heard these noises and I was not at a church, I would think the person was having a seizure, not having a cognitive process.
Well, there are a lot of news things that are going on that, frankly, it feels like the last few weeks we've been doing a little bit of elephant in the room. And I am changing this subject to something a little bit of a downer, but I kind of want to handle it at the end so we don't have to spend too much time on it. And this is James from the Internet who writes, I know this will be extensively covered by the media, and there is no question where the atheist community stands on the issue of the ultimate religious act, murder for your God. I simply ask that you air your thoughts on the events and ISIS and help soothe the pain we all feel.
We did talk a little bit about this earlier with Duck Dynasty. It's easy to make a sort of a jaunty, hilarious comparison between our Duck Dynasty star and the fighters for Islamic State, but they're ruthless. From everything that we can tell in the media, Islamic State is sometimes called ISIS, Islamic State in Syria, but we know that it's a movement that's beyond Syria, and it's ruthless.
It's weird, the sort of universe that we live in now, where we're discussing the beheading of journalists, and they go, oh no, that wasn't really beheading. They just staged it, and then they were murdered off screen, because that's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really see how that would be better, or if that makes it somehow more justifiable. And
situations like this atheists tend to be viewed as among themselves as a live and let live kind of people, but situations like ISIS really bring that into account, or, you know, sort of challenge that. What do you do? What is the political response? What is the social response when something like ISIS is going down, when they're concentrating an entire cultural group to the top of a mountain and force converting them, when they're killing journalists, when they're murdering people because they're not living up to whatever religious expectation that they have.
When Al-Qaeda is losing ground because they're not as potent as Islamic State?
Yeah.
That's a scary thing.
Well, Al-Qaeda is not the Al-Qaeda it once was. And it really, it throws a lot of things into question. I wish I had something that I could tell you that would, you know, soothe the pain and make it a little easier. I don't want to, you know, I may think in terms of humor, but this is one where I'm not going to, I would feel really uncomfortable making jokes because it's still going on.
I think this is where the whole angry atheist trope comes from, though, is like these sorts of things do make us angry.
But
like,
they make everybody angry, right?
And that's exactly the point, except that we get to be more vocal about it because we're not being held back by some religious structure.
We don't have to hedge.
Exactly.
We can point at bad and say that's bad. And I don't have to say, well, they kind of agree with me, so they're actually kind of moral, but except for this part. No, we can point to that and say the entire structure is bankrupt.
We also don't have to say we hate this because our religion is better.
Right. Yeah, we can't say we hate this because our religion is better. It's our whole purpose, our whole philosophical standpoint is that we have to provide evidence. If we're going to make a supposition on that, if we're going to say this is bad, we have to bring the evidence. We have to give reasons. We can't just say because of dogma. And this is, we can talk, this is dogma. That is the problem here. But it's dogma wearing religion. And as a result, a lot of people are dying. And I don't know what to do, and I welcome opinions on that. And on that happy note, that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Olvey, and with me was Dan Lombardo, Rebecca Friedman, Bridget Lombardo, and Carol Brulette. My writer was Dave Brulette. My production, I'm the producer, last I checked. Not much of a producer this week, but I'm trying. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Oh boy. See you guys next week.